Here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. It seems that the sun may come out. Then again, who knows? Maybe it won't. Who knows? But it's really nice, and you're going to love this show because this book really caught my eye. The minute I picked it up, I couldn't put it down, which is good for the author and bad for my eyes because I just read it in 2 hours and couldn't put it down, which is good. So let's talk about San Francisco corporate attorney Will Connolly's well-ordered life is shattered when he watches a colleague hurtle to his death outside his office window. That was really cool. Within days, Will is the prime suspect in a murder, the target of an SEC insider trading investigation, and a point in a complex criminal scheme involving the Russian mafia and a ruthless terrorist plot. And I'm not going to tell you the rest because author Reese Hirsch is here, and he's going to tell you the rest. The title of the book is The Insider, and while you're at it, why don't you just put this on your need-to-buy list for Hanukkah, or Christmas, or Kwanzaa, and we'll just start the list off with that one. And just to let everybody know that in December, once again, Just Reviews, that's me, and MJ Magazine, that's me, will be deciding on the 10 best books of the year to present awards for the best books of the year, and I'm not letting out the secret just yet. So how are you, Reese? It's nice
I'm
to
great,
have you
Fran.
On my show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And thanks for your nice review of The Insider, too.
Thank you, because I try. Actually, it's fun. And when you get a really good book that like yours, it's like it makes it so much easier to write it. So for those people that don't understand, and I have my phone out, I don't use a chat room because only once in all the years I'm doing this, I was interviewing somebody dealing with a book about the Ivory Coast, Jeffrey Wells, and his book was absolutely fantastic, and it had some ignorant people that didn't quite understand that I said, if you don't like with the book and the title, or you don't like my style, disconnect, which they did. So this show, just for everybody, is being monitored and recorded by Blog Talk Radio, and anybody that decides to leave any ridiculous comments, they'll be deleted. So define insider trading and why you decided to make this the focus of your – this is your debut novel, right? This is your first
yes.
one?
Yes. Yeah, it came out in 2010, and it was a finalist for the Thriller Award for Best First Novel. And thank you. And I based it on my experience as an attorney because I've been practicing law in San Francisco for about 27 years now. And so I had a lot of things I wanted to touch on about the law firm world. And Will Connolly's a young associate who's ambitious. He's trying to make partner in a big law firm. And right around the time that I first started writing this book, I was a little bit like Will Connolly, a senior associate trying to make partner. So I understand kind of the pressures that people in that position are under, and I wanted to reflect somebody who was at a sort of pivotal moment in his life, and he gets what he thinks he wants, which is partnership in a big law firm, and then everything goes very, very wrong, very, very fast. A lot of bad things happen to Will.
We know, and sometimes you just don't want to be involved, but he had no choice. So it helps because it's using your natural experience. So what research did you do on insider trading before, and do you deal with that? That's so exciting.
Well, I do. I work on mergers and transactions. I'm primarily a privacy attorney, but, in a big law firm, when you have a major merger deal, it goes by a code name. And that seems a little cloak and dagger, but the point is that when these companies are publicly traded, the information can't leak out that a deal is in the works because that can affect the stock price. And that's what the insider trading angle in The Insider is all about. And it was based off of a real incident involving a young lawyer that I heard about that made some headlines a few years back. Somebody, perhaps innocuously, talked about their work with, a boyfriend. And that boyfriend traded stock based upon that information, and the young attorney wound up losing their job. And I don't think that it was probably part of a serious criminal conspiracy. It was just a matter of loose lips sinking ships, and that mm-hmm. that sort of spurred my thinking about the insider, how just one little slip up, you know, intentional or not, can have such far-reaching consequences. And that's something that, that happens to Will when he takes home a young Russian girl after making partner, and she sort of knows a little bit more than she really should about the companies he's working on, and kind of leads him into making an unfortunate disclosure.
Yeah, red flags should have gone up when he met her, that's for sure. I didn't trust
yes.
him to start with. And the way they
yes.
met, I knew. Well, we won't tell anybody. So tell us about Will and what happens at the start of the novel and with Ben Fisher. Why didn't he take the phone calls? And when he realizes what happened, how does he really feel? And if he did take the phone call, would it have changed anything?
Right. Well, the novel starts out early morning in a San Francisco office tower where Will shows up to his law firm, and there are only a couple of people in the office at that point. One of them is his colleague, Ben Fisher, who's a tax attorney working on another floor, and he gets a phone call from Ben, and he lets it roll through. He doesn't pick it up. And that wasn't meant to be it was meant to be innocuous because, he's just very mm-hmm. busy, as a lot of lawyers are, and he decides, I'm working on what I'm working on. I'm going to do that, and I'll see, what message Ben leaves me, and I'll get back to him later. But it turns out that he's not going to have another chance to talk to Ben because he looks outside of his window, and he sees Ben plummeting to his death, going off the roof of the office tower 30 or so floors up. And so that's a very shocking incident that is meant to get the reader's attention in that chapter one.
It sure did.
Good.
It sure did, and it looked like that would scare anybody. Oh my God, he fell out the window. Wait a minute, is he going to come back up? Am I going to replay this? You almost think it's a television program, and it's going to come back at you, and you're going to just be able to replay the fact. Not this time. So when he sees him plummeting, what do they think, that it's suicide?
Well, I guess that's his first thought, is that it must
yeah.
be a suicide, and that Ben has just succumbed to the pressures of the job. But he rushes downstairs where a crowd is gathering, around the fallen body, and there's a little detail that makes him realize that something very strange is going on. And he sees his card key for the office building in Ben Fisher's hand, or laying next to his body. And he recognizes it because of, a particular kind of cord that he had used, to run through the card. And so then he realizes that what might be happening, and he reaches into his own pocket for where his security card usually would be, and he pulls out a different card, and he mm-hmm. realizes the odds are pretty good. This was the card that belonged to Ben Fisher. Somehow their cards got switched, which means something strange is going on, and perhaps he is involved in some way that he doesn't understand yet. So that's how the first chapter ends.
He's going to be sorry that he does. So
yes.
What happens?
He's going to be very, very sorry.
Life? Yeah, I know. He just should have walked away from this thing. Explain why he was asked to take the lead after Ben dies. He was asked to take the lead on Jupiter Software and Pearl's Systems Manager. Tell us about that. That's where it all gets even more complicated.
Right. Well, he's a corporate attorney, and so with the death of Ben Fisher, business goes on, and one of the managing partners asks him to take over the lead on this major technology merger that's in the works. And so he's sort of stepping into Ben's shoes, which is a little concerning because it's unclear at this point why Ben died. And later on we find out, it does have a little something to do with the transaction that he was working on. which Will is now involved in.
This is scary. Why was this an important merger? And when Will realizes this case is not what it really seems, so what does he do? You know, once he's involved, it's just too bad, unfortunately. And if you listen to the news, that's what happens every single day. People just don't realize it, or they just do it and they don't care. They don't get caught. So when he realizes what things are not what they are, what does he try to do?
Well, he probably makes some lapses of judgment, and mm-hmm. At first, the bad guys in my story have leverage on him mm-hmm. almost from the start, because they can charge that he was willingly cooperating with them in this insider trading scheme and some of the other things that are in the works, and so. He's a very driven young attorney who's obsessed with making partner and succeeding in his career, and so he makes a mistake. He tries to manage things on his own, and he thinks that he can do that without jeopardizing his career, because he realizes that if he's sort of tarred with that brush of engaging in insider trading, then he'll lose his job and his new partnership almost immediately, because a law firm won't allow him to taint its reputation, and they can't be involved with someone who may be engaged in criminal conduct or alleged criminal conduct. So he makes some errors in judgment, there's no doubt.
Sometimes, like I try to tell some of the students what I was teaching, and they didn't quite get it. They did get it. Sometimes you got to think of the consequences before you do your actions, because you're going to pay a lot if you do something wrong. And a lot of people just go headstrong and they don't realize it. And poor Will, oh well. And then he gets caught up. So here we go. When does he realize that he might be in over his head? He's up for partner, which is not yet. She goes to the whiskey bar. And girls are very smart and they trick people. Katya, why doesn't he realize that he's telling her information that he shouldn't have, and he falls for her? Guys, you got to be careful out there, because they are cunning and witchy, and you never know when you're going to get caught. So what does he fall for her act? I mean, he falls a lot. That's really bad.
Well, he's a little naive, and he's been career obsessed, and he probably hasn't had a lot of girlfriends, and so he's celebrating his new partnership. He has a few drinks. He makes yet another lapse in judgment and takes this young woman, Katya, home, or goes back to her apartment. And, I suppose he was in a vulnerable state, because he was looking to celebrate. He was a little lonely. He'd just broken up with his previous longtime girlfriend. And, it seems, like the kind of mistake that a lot of people make that, wouldn't get them into serious trouble, but of course in Will's case it does get him into serious trouble, because in the morning two of Katya's acquaintances, Yuri and Nikolai, are knocking at the door, and they are a couple of wannabe Russian mobsters, and Will's life gets a lot more complicated all of a sudden. And he realizes, I think if there's a point which he realizes he's over his head, that's definitely it.
But he can't tell anybody what they're really after. And the technology to the deal is attributed to what are clipper chips? And what would happen if they get hold of the encryption keys for this deal? And he can't tell anybody. He has to keep it to himself, or they're going to kill him, which is always good.
Right. That's always good for thriller writers. And the clipper chip it was a real thing. And when I wrote this book, it was when I started writing it, it was kind of in the wake of 9/11, and there was a lot of concern about domestic surveillance. But before that, at the end of the first Bush administration, during the Clinton administration, there was this idea of creating a very strong form of encryption, and it was called the Clipper Chip Program, and it was going to be installed in a lot of the devices that we use on a day-to-day basis, but the catch was that there would be a back door so that law enforcement could access those encrypted communications for law enforcement purposes and to combat terrorism. And that clipper chip program was shut down after congressional hearings where privacy concerns were voiced. But my book sort of supposes, well, what if the clipper chip program wasn't really shut down? What if it went forward in secret through a collaboration between the National Security Agency, or NSA, and a large tech company? And, you know, that was later on, many years later, with the Edward Snowden disclosures, it became clear that that sort of collaboration between the NSA and big tech companies actually was occurring. So I take a little bit of credit for you know, seeing around the corner there and building that sort of concept into my book. So
it's really good, and I don't know why people aren't, you know, reading it and reading it and reading it. I couldn't put it down. And when I said on the intro that I get eye strain very easily, especially this morning when I took too much in and said, oh, God, I read like about 2,000 word pages yesterday. Because once I get started, and if something is really good, I have to read it. And when I tell you which books I chose this week to read, I think there's going to be a whole bunch of humor based on what's been happening in the news, basically. So who are the players in this dangerous deal, and what happens when Will held up the meeting to begin discussions with those involved? And how does asking questions not a good thing? He asks too many questions, and then they get suspicious. So how does that turn around when he has to head this meeting?
Well, Will sort of tries to engage in a stalling action because he realizes that if the deal closes, then the Russian mobsters are going to be able to sort of cash in on the insider information that they have and successfully make money off the deal. So it's sort of not, you know, ethically appropriate. He should be just advancing his client's interests and getting the deal closed, but instead he starts to do a little bit of a dance and starts to, you know, ask a few questions that that muddy the waters in the negotiations and sort of stretch things out, so put up obstacles between the closing of the transaction. So
he's trying to stall everything, and he can't really
right.
do that.
He justifies it to himself because he thinks, you know, ultimately these are good questions, and he deludes himself into thinking he's still helping his client. But what he's really doing is stalling and preventing the closing from occurring. So that's probably another instance of questionable judgment on the part of Will.
Yeah, he's got a lot of questionable judgments here, and, you know, that's like I said, people don't often think before they do something. Now, something that I dealt with a long time ago when my mother-in-law passed away is due diligence, and, whoa, did I find out that you can get ripped off a lot when you ask somebody to do a family history. Of course, they had no choice but to do it, unfortunately. So who is Claire, and what is her job as someone that does due diligence and looks into the history of someone? My husband's mother was his stepmother, and unfortunately in her will she wrote stepmother. So we had to go for the family history, otherwise I don't think we would have to do that. So what is exactly does she do when she's looking for due diligence, and in this particular case, in this insider thing?
Well, Claire's a senior associate, so under Will's supervision, she's conducting due diligence of the company that's going to be acquired in the deal. And that's something that, as a junior associate, I used to do the due diligence myself. And now as a partner, I supervise those kinds of projects. And it's basically a way of, you know, when one company's acquiring another, they need to make sure that there aren't going to be any surprises when they turn over the rocks, that there aren't any liability issues that are going to become their liability issues when they acquire the company. And so that's Claire's job, and I tried to portray that in a realistic way because the insider is not the typical legal thriller where you go into the courtroom And it's more reflective of the kind of work that I actually do, because I've never, well, hardly ever been in a courtroom as a lawyer. Instead, I work on transactions and advise clients, and for a lot of lawyers, that's what their life is like.
Well, it's interesting because Fran has read so many books and everything, and thrillers and murders and everything like that. And this is maybe the second one that I've read with this. And on November 9th, I'm doing a panel show, but it deals with how would you present forensics correctly in a book? How do you present it to the court? Larry Thompson's going to do that. D.P. Lyle's going to talk about the forensics. Mike Tabman, who's FBI, is going to talk about what happens when the FBI takes over. And Bruce Coffin's going to talk about it before, the police. So I think maybe this would be an interesting panel show, maybe for December or January. How do you create a novel dealing with insider trading, mergers, and stuff like that? Because I've read a lot, and I can tell you yours is very authentic, and some of the stuff that I read is like, huh? It doesn't wash. So it's really interesting to have, panel shows like that. So why do the partners, I like Claire, people. Why did they want her out, and why does he defend her and vote to keep her when they don't want her there anymore? What do they have against her? Or is she just too smart for them?
Well, maybe she's a little too smart, but that's reflective of some things that I saw as a senior associate and junior partner. Will's just crossed that line, and he still sympathizes with the role of the associates. And so he knows that Claire is smart and does good work, but he also knows that she's sort of not kowtowed to a particularly powerful partner and gotten on his bad side. And sometimes, I've seen young associates have their careers ruined by just basically not getting along for whatever reason with a particular person at the law firm. And so, excuse me, Will sees that happening, and he wants to defend Claire in the meeting. Of course, he doesn't have nearly enough clout as the newest partner at the table to protect her, but he does use a little of his political capital and try to do that.
So if you're a partner in a law firm, and you just came on to be a partner in the law firm, the two senior partners can still fire you if they're not happy? They can unpartner you? Can they do something like that?
Well, it's a little more difficult to remove a partner, but they definitely can be terminated just like anyone else. It's a little more complicated because you've basically got an interest in the business, and you've sort of put money on the table. But you're not immune, particularly when you're a junior partner who doesn't have a huge book of business. Because in a law firm, money talks, and so these senior partners, Richard and Sam, represent a lot of money to the firm. And while every partner has one vote, some partners are more equal than others. If you represent a large part of the firm's business, then your word's going to carry a little more clout.
Well, he has to side with them, and his allegiance has to side with them, even though his mind tells him, maybe I better not. So what happens when he learns that the Russian mob plans to do the BART trains, and how can he stop that as one person and what's already in place? That was scary.
Right. And that was sort of modeled after an incident that occurred in Japan where poisonous sarin gas was released in a Japanese subway train. And so I suppose that a similar attack might occur on the San Francisco BART trains. And he realizes that this is so serious that he has to come out of hiding. He can't turn his back on that, so he makes an anonymous disclosure of what he knows about the incident to law enforcement. But he's trying to work his way through this very tangled conspiracy that he finds himself in the middle of.
That is scary. So Claire's fired, and Will realizes that they're both in danger. So what do they both do to foretell that things will get more dangerous? And then how do you decide which side to take? The mob or the law firm? I mean, how did that put them both in a dangerous position? And I still like Claire.
Right, Right. And here, Will is sort of pushed to a point where he probably would be willing to, sort of give up whatever career he has left, to get himself out of this situation. But the problem is then the ante is upped again because he learns that his own mother, who's in an assisted living facility, is being threatened by the Russian mobsters. So at that point, he has to question whether he's willing to come forward because the implicit threat is that his mother could be killed. And then that puts him in an incredible pressure cooker. He doesn't know which way to turn, but he's trying to sort of find a way out of this situation.
That's scary because you don't know if they're watching you. You don't know if your house is, the apartment is bugged. You don't know if they have your phones. I mean, unless you have these burner phones, wherever you get those, and nobody can chase them. And I often wonder if you really can't trace them. It's really interesting. So Will is smart most of the time, but some of the times he doesn't think it through. So how do we know this when he deals with the two thugs and then he meets the man in charge? That was brave. That was absolutely insane, but he was brave. Yeah, he met him.
Right. Mm-hmm. Boca.
Boca.
Yeah, that was based on some research I did about the Russian mob. I read quite a few books on them, and it's a fascinating subculture. But at one point he does, once again, maybe an error in judgment, but he realizes that he needs to know who at the law firm is setting him up, because he realizes there's a connection between the Russian mob and the law firm, and he has to know who it is. And so eventually he gets frustrated and makes a perhaps foolish, perhaps smart decision, to go back to this, restaurant where the Russian mob has its headquarters, and try to confront Katya and then ultimately this, head Russian mobster Boca, and it's takes a little courage for him to do that, and he's putting himself in danger, but he sees it as the way to get to the bottom of things.
Well, the ending tells you that, too. So who's Riley? And how did Claire was cool. She played him to get what she wants. So getting the silver disc or the keys, how can that help them stop the attack? And is this you said it's based on a real-life incident that happened in Japan. So how does she manage to trick this guy? I mean, I thought that was really one of my favorite scenes. I mean, just who's girl power, people.
Right. Claire has been at the tech company's offices for some time conducting due diligence, and Riley is an employee of the company, a techie, and he's been flirting with her, trying to get a date with her, and she does play him a little bit, and manages to get access to the some of the keys to the kingdom, as you might say, of the tech company, the encryption keys.
That's scary, because you don't know who to trust in this particular point. So who is Asif Aga, and why does Will not to trust this guy or cross him? He's meeting an awful lot of guys that he shouldn't cross, ever.
Right. One thing leads to another, and his meetings with the Russian mafia lead to also meeting this Asif Aga person, who he doesn't know who he is at first, but he can tell that he's a serious and potentially dangerous person. And what's happening is that the mob has this potential to access these encryption keys, and they're trying to sell them to an interested party, which is this terrorist organization who's prepared to exploit them by creating this terrorist incident in the San Francisco BART system. And so at first he doesn't know who Asif Aga is. He knows he's a bad guy, but later when he meets with DOJ and SEC representatives, they show him Aga's picture. They're beginning to piece this together. And so he realizes, they tell him that he's a terrorist, and he realizes just how, you know, how the stakes have been upped yet again in this terrible scenario he finds himself in.
Well, the SEC and the DOJ and the police department question him. So, and they know that he leaked information that he might have given to the mob about the merger. So he's in big trouble about that because they somehow found out. Just when you think you're not going to get found out, you get found out. So how did you react to something like that?
Well, they don't have the smoking gun to link him to the insider trading, but they've got a pretty good idea, you know, based on you know, some suspicious trading activity that's been occurring. And so they're ratcheting up the pressure on him, hoping that he'll finally, you know, basically fess up and tell them everything he knows. He's not quite prepared to do that yet, but they let him know that he's going to be shortly subject to a securities enforcement action, that he's going to get what's called a Wells letter, putting him on notice that, that he's going to be charged with criminal insider trading.
That's scary. Just think about Bernie Madoff and Martha Stewart.
That's right.
And people that are doing, there are some, it's, what's really funny is that, strange is that there are some people that are doing it and get away with it, and some people that they just make an example of. And there are so many, it's a bad crime, but there are so many other crimes that are a whole lot worse sometimes. So there's Margaret and Dennis, and why do they try to tell him what, to get him to tell what he knows? And then he finally asks for a lawyer. How come all of a sudden he realizes, I need to be represented? And that's probably one of the better decisions that he made, or isn't it?
Yes. His judgment starts to improve here a little bit because, well, they tell him point blank that you know, you're going to get charged shortly with insider trading. So he suddenly needs a defense attorney. And as I point out, in large international law firms, they often don't handle criminal matters. That's a sort of a separate specialty of the law. You know, they may handle some white-collar crime, but he certainly can't go to his own law firm for this. So he thinks back to his classmates in law school and thinks of one who sort of took the path of being a criminal lawyer, and so he seeks him out, even though he's sort of in a running a low-rent practice in San Francisco's Mission District. He is kind of a savvy criminal defense lawyer. You know, SEC charges may not be exactly his bailiwick, but he knows enough to help Will out a little bit.
Well, then there's Yuri and his partner. This was really flabbergasting. They try to go to a motel to hide, he and Claire, and how do they always find them? I mean, it's almost as if they have a radar on them or a bug or something, that they're always finding them. And these two guys, I don't like them at all.
Well, good. I'm glad you don't like them. They're definitely bad guys. But I want them to be a little bit, you know, sort of comic and scary, too. And I don't always answer that question in the book of find him. But later on, I think you could maybe draw the suggestion that they're getting a little help from this insider at the law firm, you know, who's helping to track, you know, Will and Claire. But you're right, they do pop up at the most inconvenient times for Will to scare him and threaten him.
Well, actually, you know, as you said that, that sort of relates to the title. Because the title means insider trading, but it also means that there's an insider in the law firm that's a bad person.
That's right. That's kind of the mystery that runs throughout the book. You know from the beginning that something's going on inside this firm, and even in the midst of all of this drama and terror that he's exposed to, he still keeps coming back to the idea of, when one of my colleagues must be behind this in some way to tie all this together. And, of course, he eventually figures that out in the end.
Well, they're not going to figure it out if they read it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I don't want to
say whether
I've given a few spoilers here. I'll save that one, though.
No, nobody's allowed to know who it is. That's why I'm not asking too many questions about that person.
Okay.
So
okay.
When Will realizes that things are going sour, he hires an attorney who he hopes will take the case and advises him to shut his mouth. So how does the attorney work in his favor, and how does he manage to not get charges filed against him, yet we're not really sure what that means?
Well, in the end, things sort of sort themselves out to a certain degree. I won't go into a lot of the details, but Will sort of constructs a scheme to, to bring down these members of the Russian mob without putting himself in the middle of it. And in the end, I think it's the DOJ agent, Karen Boudreau.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what he did, but she can't prove it. But she realizes
mm-hmm.
that he was helping them out and sort of worked out a satisfactory conclusion to this whole mess. And if she had the smoking gun on the insider trading, she would probably prosecute him. But since she didn't, she's ultimately willing to kind of let things go. So this whole book was a series of very unfortunate events for Will that get worse and
mm-hmm.
worse, and you think, how will he ever get out from under all of this? But I tried to construct a way that he could, with reasonable plausibility, extricate himself, and hopefully the reader buys it.
I'm not going to tell you. I'm not giving it away.
Okay. We've probably said enough about the ending.
That's exactly right. On Monday, this is really exciting. Everybody that I told I was interviewing you, by the way, knows who you are. I didn't get one of those, huh? Who's that? I go, it's about time. Monday at 10 o'clock, before Fran goes to the dentist again, Carla Negus will be here. Live and in person on the phone for Thief's Mark. That book was fantastic. I never do three shows in a week, and I don't know what I did. Lynn and Valerie Constantine will be here on the 1st to talk about The Last Mrs. Parrish. That was scary. And David McAuliffe will be here on the next day, on the 2nd, to talk about Reload. And he actually printed out the book to make sure I could read it in print. And on the 9th, like I said, is my panel show. On the 14th, Gerard DeMoraney will be here for the New Detroit, a Chris De Niro book. And on the 16th, a book I actually very rarely ask anyone to be on my show that's not a well-known author, but the author, James Long of The Mean, talks about a high school, an assistant principal that's a real assistant principal, and what happens when the gangs take over and how this guy brilliantly handles the entire situation, including a terrorist attack, where he actually enlists the help of the gang to help him get rid of the terrorists. And if you're wondering what I've been reading this week and what you should buy yourself a million copies of The Insider because you won't be disappointed for Hanukkah. You might want to read, when it does come out, Carrie Baldwin's Countdown, a medical book that I'm reading, ADA, Beyond ADHD, a true story about Jeffrey Emerson, and it's not out yet, but it's called Killing Season. It's by Faye Kellerman. And the other one that's not out yet that I did read, Demon Crown by James Rollins. You got to read them. They're just absolutely, those are two books that also gave me my strength because I just read them. But we're going to come back to Will right now. When Will comes face to face with the truth and confronts someone close to him, what happens that he does something that's reckless? Here we go again. And what does the mob expect him to do? What happens if this merger doesn't go through? What's going to happen to him?
Well, he is in a bind because he doesn't want to violate his ethical duties and sort of do things that would sabotage the deal. But on the other hand, if the transaction goes through, people are going to, members of the Russian mob and others are going to profit from that insider information and successfully commit their financial crime. And so that's sort of the bind that he's in. And ultimately, there's a point at which word leaks out about the transaction, and the stock price of the company dips, which puts him in still greater jeopardy because now the mob is losing money on their initial illicit investment. And so that once again, you know, ups the ante. So I say this is my first book, and so I spent quite a bit of time on it. You know, I really wrote it and rewrote it, and you know, I think that ultimately I was very happy with it. But this is the book I kind of learned how to write a novel on, and in some ways, it's a very tight and elaborate plot, and that's partly the product of the fact that I sort of worked and reworked it, and all with the goal of creating something that was both, you know, very sort of true to some aspects of my law firm experience, but also, you know, showed the reader hopefully a very good time and created a lot of suspense.
Now, I'll tell you, I've read a lot of debut novels, as everybody knows, because my eyes burg out, yeah. And you really got a great publisher in Berkeley, which is really great because it's hard to get someone the first time. So the novel had to be first rate, otherwise they wouldn't take it. And then I was glad you sent it to me too. I was like, a surprise, oh good, something good to read for a change. I never know what I'm going to get. And I've gotten some really strange books this week. For those of you that need a good laugh, I'm really seriously, I wrote a review for Book Pleasures for Norm Goldman, the number one site on the internet anywhere. And they asked if I would take this. This is hilarious. It's called Fake News, Strange Historical Facts, The Reimagined in the World of Donald Trump. You got to read it. It is so funny that they take stupid incidents that happen, that might happen, and then they relate it to really what happened and really things that really did happen in the world. And you got to read it. It's I'm almost done with it. I started it this morning. It's hilarious. For those of you that need to laugh at something. When he's fired, how does this change things? And is he going to be, you know, what would happen if he gets arrested? Is he going to be forced to cough up the information?
Well, when he's fired and he's caught trying to find some information that he can feed to the Russians, that puts him in yet another difficult situation because he no longer has the access to satisfy his tormentors, and so, you know, he's sort of on the outs. You know, the one advantage he had was that, you know, he was still inside the firm, still had the ability maybe to find the person at the firm who was involved in this, still able to, you know, keep a handle on this merger transaction and perhaps, you know, find, you know, information that he could feed to the Russians to appease them. But now he's out on his own and very much alone, you know, with the exception of Claire. And so that he has to find a new way to solve his problem, which he ultimately does with that little scheme at the end.
But we're not going to give that away.
Yep.
So what would happen? Excuse me. You know, now the Russian mob, any mob, is dangerous. So if he told them, go stick it somewhere, I'm not going to do anything, and he reported it to the SEC, what was he afraid that was going to happen? Who's more powerful, the Russian mob or the SEC? Seriously.
That's true. I mean, I think that at first he's motivated to keep his precious job and his partnership. And later on, you know, I think he feels that he's in so deep that he would be criminally prosecuted if he came forward to the SEC. So I think there's a point at which, you know, he would have to, you know, basically give up and go to law enforcement. But he makes one last attempt to extricate himself.
Well, he does, but we're not going to say what happens. So in real life, in, you know, the corporate world in real life, we know this happens from the arrest for insider trading. So why doesn't that stop anyone from doing it? And if Will had to do this all over again, would he do it again the same way?
I think he would do things differently. I think he would have probably taken another turn early on, but if he knew where the road he was headed down. But insider trading still seems to have a great allure to a lot of people in this world, even though the systems that the SEC has set up to trade, to track trading, are very sophisticated, and it's often found out. But sometimes these things occur, through inadvertence, and that was sort of the thing that precipitated this plot line for me, the fact that a young associate sort of seemed to have made a mistake just in talking to someone that they were close to and didn't imagine that they would use that information in an inappropriate way. So it's that idea of one false step and then all of the dominoes that can fall after that. That's kind of what this book is about. The first step hopefully is one that people can see that anyone might make that mistake, but then as I lead you down this path, things get worse and worse and worse, and you have to question, if I were in that situation, how would I try to get myself out?
Well, there are a lot of lessons that he has to learn, and he has to learn to make better choices, and insider training and all the rest of it is dangerous. So
right.
At
if
the end,
people
it leads
made...
me to believe, yeah, people do this. I don't know why.
Well, if people made good choices, we really would be missing a lot of good thrillers, because thrillers are based upon people making bad choices and getting into awful situations, and that's very much what my book is about.
Well, that's true, because if there wasn't a problem, and if it just went too easy for him, and he got away with it, or that the mob just said, yeah, no problem, no problem, it would be boring. So you've
got
to have a lot of suspense and a lot of danger. So if Will could speak to us right now, what would he say to anybody that tried to do this?
He'd say, knowing what I know now, go to law enforcement. Give up your job. Don't try to protect your career. Your life is more important than your career. That's a lesson a lot of senior associates in big law firms don't learn until later in life.
Well, what would have happened if he actually went to the law firm, went to law enforcement or the SEC or the DOJ, whatever? Would the mob have come after him anyway? Would they try to kill him if they find out that he would they have to go witness protection?
Certainly, if he if it was at the point where he knew about the Nikolai and Yuri it could be that he might have had to go that route, but. But that would be another path, another complicated path for my story.
Well,
I
didn't read the next one, but go on.
Oh, yeah, speaking of the next one, this was a standalone thriller, and then after this I wrote three thrillers featuring a character that's a little bit, both characters are kind of close to me in different ways, but I'm a privacy attorney in real life, primarily. And so my next three books are about Chris Bruin, a former Department of Justice cyber crimes prosecutor who's in private practice. And so they deal much more than the insider, even, with hacking and cyber crime and a lot of interesting technology issues, which are sort of taken from my day-to-day practice.
So that would be the one that I'm going to read next, the surveillance, right?
Surveillance is my most recent book, so it's the third in the series. But they all, you can read them all independently. I think it helps a little bit if you read them in order, so you can sort of follow the arc of the character. Mm-hmm. But each one is a standalone story.
Well, I'm going to read it. I have a pile of so many books inside that I don't even know sometimes where to begin. And the Donald Trump book I'm going to finish today. And I intend to finish a few more books today.
I envy you all the time you have to read.
Not really. There are times I just don't. I just do it because it's something that I enjoy doing. And the radio shows actually I enjoy doing even more. And this I should say, was a dare that my sister, before she died, dared me when I retired from teaching. I'm a reading and writing specialist, so I deal with kids with learning disabilities. And she said to me, you know, you're going to be a couch potato, so why don't you review a cookbook? And everybody knows I don't know the one end of a stove from another. I still don't. And I said, Marcia, the last time I made something, I accidentally was making something for a date, and that was a bigger mistake because in turning the oven on, I turned it on self-clean. Needless to say, I self-cleaned the meatloaf. And we won't say what I seriously. We won't, that was like call the pizza place and have them deliver something, but nobody ever knew, except that you know that's just me. So I enjoy doing this, and there are times that you know like I have other stuff to do, but nobody cares. And the Partners in Crime, by the way, does a phenomenal blog tour. They're doing my blog tour, I have to mention it, for my new book, A Daughter's Promise, and I am so excited. I have 7 5-star reviews on Amazon. I got another 2 glowing reviews this week from people I don't know that are just reviewing the book and reading it. It's promises not to put my mom in a nursing home because she was Alzheimer's. And it's all true story. It's told in my voice and her voice. And for those people that read it and said that I repeated one section I was told to by the publisher to make my point. So there. So
congratulations on your book.
Yeah, I'm excited. It came out July 27th. It's published by Edit Prose. I got a real publisher. Yay. That's
Yay.
It. And I'm hoping to write the next one very soon if I ever get 10 minutes to do it. I'm not sure. My grandmother was in a Polish detention center for sterilization, unfortunately, and she told me some of it, and I've been researching the rest because I want to write her story next, as she told it to me. And so tell us a little bit more about surveillance and this particular story and what's coming next.
Well, surveillance sort of is sort of the twin book in some ways to The Insider, because in The Insider, it was a post 9/11 book, and I was sort of thinking about how surveillance was being ratcheted up in the wake of 9/11, but we didn't have a lot of evidence of exactly what was happening. There were a few, you know, New York Times articles, and there was a lot of speculation, but then after Edward Snowden, we really knew so much about how domestic surveillance was being conducted. And so surveillance is sort of the flip side of The Insider, because it's my post-Snowden NSA surveillance book.
Oh, nice.
And it looks at
all
the scary ways that we can all be tracked as individuals by the government. And even in the post-Snowden world, where the NSA's powers have been restricted, you know, I sort of suppose, you know, how the NSA might work around those restrictions. And also it supposes that the NSA had access to a particularly powerful tool, quantum computing. And quantum computing is kind of a mind-blowing scientific concept that seemed like a theory when I was writing this book, but Google has reportedly successfully tested quantum computing. And just very briefly, quantum computing is a way of performing conceivably calculations at an unprecedented speed, which might allow you to crack any form of encryption if it worked as advertised. And so one of the premises of the surveillance is that the NSA, you know, breaks the riddle of quantum computing and is using that that new tool to have unprecedented access to our communications, even though in the post-Snowden world there are laws restricting that. The new technology and the new tools are just too tempting, and so they sort of create a secret working group to continue that activity.
Well, that is interesting, and I have it in my to-read pile. I'm picking it out of the bag. That's it. Goes on top of the pile. My chair has 20 books on it, so we're going to have to add this one to my list because everybody else is going to have to wait because now you got me. I want to read it. So if I do
Thank
a panel
you.
Show in December, what type of law enforcement? I've done shows with so many people in law enforcement, it's mind-boggling. Which other than somebody that works for the SEC, and I'm sure there's somebody out there that I did interview for that, who would I ask to join the panel show to say what type of things that they would look for if they were going to arrest somebody that did insider trading? Because I would want you to be the lead person, but what kind of law enforcement person? Would an FBI agent be somebody, or just a regular criminal defense lawyer? Who would I ask? Or like Alan Jacobson deals in that also.
Right. Well,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, in my book, the DOJ gets involved because there's kind of a criminal overlay to it and a connection to organized crime. But excuse me, pardon my cough. But the SEC would really be the primary regulator for insider trading. I know it's difficult to get those people to talk in an interview, but that would be your ideal panel member, I think.
You never know what I'm going to do. No one knows what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm... I mean, I walked into the Baker Shop Bakery the other day, and I wanted to know something about what a paramedic does, because my niece is becoming a paramedic, but I wanted to understand something about something that happened, and I just stopped the guy and asked him, and he told me. It's like my husband looks at me and says, "You didn't just ask him a question about something." I go, "Sure, why not? The worst that could help me is I'm not going to answer you." So before we end, where can everybody find out about you and your work? And I'm going to read Surveillance. And do you want to do another interview?
Sure, I'm game. Please let me know. I'd be happy to come back, and I appreciate it. And my website is...
Yeah, I have it in my calendar here of 1,000 things to do.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. And my website is research.com. You can find out about all my books there, and I have 4 of them out, and I've completed a 5th, and hopefully I may have some news to announce on that 5th one before too long.
Well, that's good. When do you expect that one to come out? Because I want it before everybody gets it.
Well, I'm in discussions with my publisher as we speak, so I don't have a publication date yet, but hopefully I'll have some good news to announce on that one very, very soon.
Well, for those of you that don't know it, John Land loves me, thank God. Somebody does. So I hope to be at the Thriller Fest next year. I'm the only media person that's invited. And that's really cool.
I love
cool.
Thriller Fest. And John Land's great.
He's
and that's where we met.
I should have known. That's right. And I stopped people. I even stopped Gary Grossman, who said my review was the best one he's ever gotten. And, you know, it was really nice to be recognized. And like, who is she? But John Land is going to be on my show December 6th. We're going to talk about Strong to the Bone. If anybody's never read his books, this is John Land at his best. Let me tell you, it's fantastic. I have Snifter and Death on December 4th. And I have D.P. Lyle on December 11th for A-List. That's just up till December. And if you like, I can, if December 19th is good for you, I can put that in, and I'll read the book before then. If that
sure.
works for you for
another
interview.
I think my calendar is open on December 19th, so count me in.
Okay, I'm going to put it in there. I want to thank you so much. I want to thank everybody for listening. Marcia Castle Cook was listening on the show, and she's the author of the new several children's books, and my favorite one is Snack Attack that she writes for kids. And of course she's got her Grand Central, which is a phenomenal book too, and she's got another one coming out, but I promised not to tell anybody what it was until I read it over again. So everybody have a great day, and I want to thank the weather person for not making it rain just yet, because I really want to walk later, and it's, you know, I can't walk if it's going to rain. Thank you so much, Reese. Everybody have a nice day. You too, and bye.
Thanks, Fran.